Welcome, everyone. I will call the Senate Finance Committee, Finance and Revenue Committee to order. Apologize for slipping into serious Senate time. As the session drags on, Senate time gets more and more lenient. We are going to go in order of the agenda today. So we will start by opening a work session on House Bill 2543. Christine.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the A6 amendment to House Bill 2543 would direct the state treasurer to allocate $19 million from the Common School Fund to credit the senior property tax deferral revolving account. And then the Department of Revenue, it directs them to transfer the $19 million back to the state treasurer by June 15, 2013 for a redeposit into this fund. If the balance is not sufficient to make the required transfer, it directs the Department of Revenue to then submit a report to the legislature by March 15, 2013, that assesses the impact of the reforms that are made in this act. And the measure directs the Legislative Assembly to make a determination on that long-term viability of that program. And to also appropriate any funds the Department of Revenue still owes to the Common School Fund, back to the Common School Fund. If this doesn't happen, this measure also directs the Legislative Assembly to devise a repayment plan for these appropriated funds. You have before you a letter from Ledge Council that explains that the Common School Fund, when funds are borrowed, they must be repaid with an interest rate equal to the interest rate that the other funds are earning during that same time period. So there would be an interest rate associated with this repayment that would happen. And the A6 amendment has no change to fiscal impact statement, and there's no revenue impact statement on this change. It doesn't change the revenue impact statement that already exists.
Okay, and so we have all the paperwork we need on
yes.
this, correct? Okay, Mr. Salvaggio, would you like to come up and put yourself on the record?
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Michael Salvaggio from the Office of the State Treasurer. We've taken a look at Treasury of the Dash A6 amendments to this bill. They incorporate a lot of work that the Treasury has been doing with the Department of Revenue, the Revenue Committee staff, Legislative Council. We're satisfied with the Dash A6 amendments. We feel that they are good amendments and will allow us to handle this this transfer adequately and with and prudently.
Thank you, and I want to express the committee's appreciation for the Treasury's willingness to get involved in solving the problem that we have with this program. And I'm optimistic that the changes that are in the underlying bill will make a big difference in the sustainability of the program. But we couldn't have gotten there without help from the Treasury, and we really appreciate it. And
thank you, Madam Chair.
So do all the people who benefit from the program, whether they know it or not. And we also appreciate what we understand was your important role in the party last night.
So. Thank you for placing that on the record, Madam Chair.
All right. It's there for posterity to see. Okay. Are there questions from the committee? Okay. I had a discussion with Senator Telfer, and she told me that she's comfortable with the direction this is going, so I feel
Madam
like
Chair,
our motion is in order.
Yeah, before we do the motion, I would be curious. I see we have Legislative Council here to maybe elaborate a little bit with respect to the potential that a court would not hold that the language in the bill is adequate, subject to a challenge. I think it would be important for us to have that understanding.
Okay, that's a good question. Could help us out there. Thank you.
For the record, my name is Alan Dale, Deputy Legislative Counsel. I'm trying to find it. Sorry. Madam Chair, Senator Morse, the problem is that there are no cases directly on point, and so we are, there is a case that has to do with the managing of the lands that are part, that are managed by the same division, and essentially the Common School Fund was established as a trust with certain land grants at the time of the formation of the state. And so we looked at the prudential requirements for investments of a trust, and we feel some of those are a matter of judicial doctrine and some of them are actually codified. And we feel that this will meet those requirements because there is a requirement that the $19 million be repaid with interest, but the interest rate is equal to the average positive rate of interest earned on all the other unexpended monies from the Common School Fund, that is, all the other monies that are available for investment. So, in fact, a prudent investor could get a net negative return on investment, and we are saying it has to be the average positive rate of interest. So we feel that this should survive a challenge, but since there are no cases on point, we can't really nail it down.
By no case law, do you mean that, to your knowledge, this has not been done before?
No, that I mean that there is no reported decision on a situation like this. It may have been done before. I don't know whether it has been or not, but there's no reported decision about a challenge to this situation.
Essentially borrowing from the Common School Fund?
You could. I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Senator Haas, members of the committee. Well, it's interesting. I mean, you could look at it that way, but at the same time, what the money is going to the Department of Revenue, and what the Department of Revenue does with this money is pay property taxes on behalf of the participants in the program, but it pays it to the counties, and then what it takes back, it gets a lien on that property, and the amount it has transferred is payable out of any disposition of the property with 6% interest per annum. So in a sense, what Department of Revenue is doing is making an investment, and so in a sense they're borrowing money to make an investment. But I think it meets the definition of an investment.
And if worse came to worse and everything was thrown out about this, if this whole scheme was thrown out, what would happen then? Would that just mean we'd have to shut down the program? Maybe John Phillips could come up.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, John Phillips, Department of Revenue. What would happen then? I guess that would depend on where we were, what payments had come in, what payments we had made. There's about $1 million+ a month that comes into the fund from repayments. So if you shut down new applicants, for example, you could increase the amount of revenue in that fund and increase the speed at which it would be repaid. There are a lot of options, I think, on that line.
Of course, our goal here is to try to have a smooth transition to the more scale, the more sideboarded program that we have here without shutting it off to people who really could benefit from it.
Well,
Senator Morris.
Yeah, I'm sorry for not keeping up here, but this amendment wasn't in the House. This amendment wasn't in the measure that passed the House.
No.
Okay, so we're adding that. And I'm not so much worried about the, if this gets challenged and thrown out. I'm just worried about precedent. going into the common school fund, which I always, you know, hold very sacred. And I understand the reasons are all good and pure, and we're trying to save this program, but, you know, it's the old slippery slope, nose into the tent argument, that if we could do this, then maybe there's another program and by which we could borrow or use as collateral. And I'm just, it just makes me a little bit nervous.
Well, and I would share that nervousness. The difference about this is a self-sustaining program that has been rated in the past. So it's undercapitalized, if you will. And this is a way of restoring the capital in hopes that we can get it back to a sustained basis. So the situation is unique enough, I think. What's it?
I'm already getting calls on this.
Okay. Anyway, I do share your concern. I don't know any way around it on this one. Senator Morris.
No, thank you. And that was going to be my question as well, but I would like to present it to council. Is there any way that this could be considered a precedent that would be repeated in a legal sense for other general government operations?
Madam Chair, Senator Morris, I mean, I suppose yes, would be the direct, simple answer. There are, it's actually kind of difficult to do with this fund because it is a trust, because some of the provisions are in the Constitution, and in addition, there are investments made out of the fund. There are also some, there are statutory requirements of prudent investment that apply to it. So it isn't that easy, and even to do this, and I suppose it is possible. I might say it's more in your hands than mine, than council's. I think it would be possible, but I would like to say this wasn't an easy thing to figure out how to do. So I wouldn't worry about it becoming like spreading like a brush fire. And I just wanted to repeat that we have, that it does guarantee a positive rate of return, which is more than you can ordinarily do in the market.
And it does have to meet that threshold of being an investment as opposed to an appropriation to
mm-hmm.
the fund.
Yes.
So it will be returned if it ends up being drawn from the fund, it will be returned from with interest. Michael, did you want to add anything to this? I saw you move up a few rows.
Madam Chair, again, for the record, Mike Salvaggio from the Office of the State Treasurer. And I think to address Senator Haas's concerns just a bit, I'm sure DSL will come in here and throw a shoe at my head if something is incorrect, but the Common School Fund is actually composed not only of constitutional sources but also statutory sources, money that's been directed there at the legislature's direction. And in the past, there have been, in years prior, money taken out of that in times of dire economic need. I think the last time that happened was in 2002. I would say that this is going the opposite way on the proverbial slippery slope, considering that we have the assurance of a positive repayment. That's a more prudent step, I believe, and I think the Treasury believes, than simply to take out of the fund without intending to repay. So I would say that because of that reason, some precedent exists in a sense, and this is actually, at least in our mind, a much more prudent alternative.
Thank you.
So there's, how much is in the statutory fund of the Common School Fund? And do you know that you can give us the ins and outs of the 2002 diversion?
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, I don't have the information in front of me.
Anybody know that? All right. Senator Mars?
I know that when this bill comes before my caucus, there will be some eyebrows raised. It would be helpful maybe to have a little more elaboration in the SMS that explains this in a way that members would feel comfortable casting an aye vote. Because, you know, there is the temptation there. Mm-hmm. And I think there will be some people that would be very concerned about that, setting a precedent and then repeating this for other purposes.
Okay, maybe you could work with Christine to make sure that we have a probably more detailed in the weeds SMS than we normally have.
Certainly.
Thank you. Other questions from the committee? Okay. Senator Morris, we are in work session.
Madam Chair, I move the -A6 amendments to House Bill 2543, dated 6/10/11. That happens to be today.
Yes. Senator Morris has, yes, these are hot off the press.
Yeah.
Senator Morris has moved the -A6 amendments to House Bill 2543. Is any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2543 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris has moved House Bill 2543 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Would either of you like to carry this? Senator Hass will carry it and hopefully get on the record some of the conversation that occurred today. Okay, good work, committee. Now we will open a work session on Senate Bill 453 for purposes of referring it to Ways and Means.
Yes, ma'am. Chair Burdick, members of the committee, Senate Bill 453, for the purpose of work session, this is redefining remote small elementary school. And under this bill, 22 elementary schools will newly qualify as remote small elementary schools. And they will increase their ADM wages through small school corrections. And then in the revenue impact analysis, you see the impact will be $4.3 million. More to school districts with newly qualified small elementary schools, and then that money will be shifted away from other school districts.
Wait a second. I thought there was another funding source for that. It'll come out of the school fund.
We have to do current law, current practice analysis. So. This analysis assumes there are no additional dollars in the state's full fund to fund higher number of weighted students at this point.
Okay. All right. This is part of the powers that be, so they have other funding sources in mind, I'm sure. So, Senator Morris, let's quickly get this out of here.
Madam Chair, I'm not too sure how to make this motion, but I would move Senate Bill 453 without recommendation to the committee on
Ways and Means.
Okay, I'll back up, redact that. I move Senate Bill 453 without recommendation and request subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Morris has moved Senate Bill 453 without recommendation and with a recommendation for a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Okay. Public hearing on House Bill. I will open a public hearing on House Bill 3454. Welcome, Chris.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3454 is a somewhat technical bill relating to a potential double deduction taken on personal income taxes. And it's the consequence of the interaction of Oregon laws regarding net operating losses and the disconnect from federal law regarding certain deductions. For example, the bonus, or mainly the bonus depreciation deduction. When we disconnected from that federal provision, we required an add back to the Oregon return in the year that they incurred the business expense. And then in subsequent years, there was a subtraction. So in effect, it was just a timing issue when that deduction was allowed. But some taxpayers, when the year they made that investment and claimed the bonus depreciation at the federal level, that claiming that bonus depreciation may have pushed them into a net operating loss position. And in Oregon law, for personal income taxpayers, the definition of Oregon net operating loss is federal net operating loss. Basically, for Oregon, it just says, see what your federal net operating loss was, and that's what it is for Oregon. So when they do that, they are implicitly taking advantage of the bonus depreciation in that first year. So at the federal level, they're pushed into the net loss position, and on the Oregon return, they're also pushed into the net operating position, net operating loss position, thereby claiming that bonus depreciation in that first year. Then in subsequent years, when they, in Oregon law, they were allowed a subtraction to account for the difference in depreciation. And in every subsequent year that they claim that Oregon subtraction, that would be effectively claiming the deduction again for those little pieces, because they claim the full deduction in the year of their net operating loss. And then in the subtractions, they were claiming the bonus depreciation in subsequent years. And so that's a double deduction, because by disconnecting from the bonus depreciation, the intent was that there's a smaller depreciation in the first year and then a larger depreciation in the second years, second, third, and fourth year, compared to federal law. And so what this bill does is that disallows the additional subtraction in years 2, 3, 4, and later to avoid the double deduction.
Okay, and this is apparently the fruit of the eagle eye of Representative Air Brewer.
Yes.
Who's a CPA. I see Mr. Douglas in the audience here on the House Revenue Committee. I will have to say that this is a nice little catch, because I see the revenue impact. It has a positive revenue impact of $500,000 in 11 and 12 and 300,000 in 12-13. Is that correct? And then the revenue impact goes up for some reason in 11-13.
Well, 11-13, that point 8 is the sum of the two.
Oh, I see.
Go ahead. Then it goes down. And that the trend there corresponds to how the depreciation deduction is taken over time. It's an accelerated depreciation, so it's kind of front-loaded, and then it tails off. One thing I would point out is that it's not a deviation from current practices for the Department of Revenue, and I think they may be testifying to this.
Okay.
But they would make the adjustment upon an audit. But this is kind of a proactive notification to taxpayers that they can either file amended return, or in lieu of filing an amended return, they can just include this kind of unclaimed prior deductions on their 2011 tax return.
Okay. Deborah, you want to come on up?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan with the Department of Revenue. And staff has done such an excellent job in explaining this, I don't want to confuse the issue. One thing that we have heard as a question is whether or not interest would be charged on returns filed for 2010 that now add back the subtraction that was originally claimed. Also, whether penalty would be charged. We do have statutory authority to either not impose or to waive penalty. We don't ordinarily waive interest because that is a charge for the use of the money. But I think if we could get a sense of direction from the committee as to whether you think a waiver of penalty would be appropriate in these cases, that would be helpful for us too.
Well, this was this situation came about because when we did the bonus depreciation, we didn't fully analyze the interaction with the federal. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, the issue is that the legislature made a policy decision a number of years ago that the Oregon net operating loss would be the same amount as the federal. Mm-hmm. So that policy decision was made, and then a recent policy decision not to connect to the accelerated depreciation was made, and the two don't work well together in this case. So
in a perfect world, when we disconnected from the bonus depreciation, we would have spotted this and dealt with it at the time.
Madam Chair, yes. Most likely you would have said if you're taking this through a net operating loss in the year of purchase, you don't also get to claim it again as a subtraction in future years. And that is the position that we have taken in audit or in reviewing returns, is to not allow that additional subtraction.
So in the position that you've been taking, which you're asking now for statutory clarity on,
yes,
have you been charging interest and penalties?
Madam Chair, we would charge interest on underpayment of estimated tax, yes. And penalty would only apply if we had asserted that there was additional tax owed and the taxpayer had objected to that, and we had assessed, and then the assessment had not been paid. So there is an opportunity to pay the tax without penalty when we make an adjustment, but the interest would be charged.
Okay, and that's been your practice?
Yes, Madam Chair.
What does the committee think about this? He's looking for direction.
Well, I would concur with that. Taxpayers are obligated to follow the law as it's written. If there's an advantage to the taxpayer, but it's in statute, to put a penalty on that would seem to be...
No, I don't think we're talking about penalty
now.
I think we're talking about interest.
But you said you did have enough. You could charge.
Madam Chair, Senator Morris, there is a penalty for failure to pay the tax when the tax is due. So if our position is that the law is clear and taxpayers should not have taken a subtraction in 2010 for this additional amount, and we adjust the return, if it's not paid, then a penalty could go on that return.
I see. Okay.
You have any comments on this? Okay. So we're saying we can. Are we saying that we concur with the actual practice that they're doing?
Madam Chair, and that would be that if the tax is not paid when we have sent a bill, or if the taxpayer amends and sends payment of tax with the amended return, a penalty would not be charged. Is that the sense of the committee?
That would be my sense, yeah. And that's been your current practice. Is that
correct? For adjustments and amended returns, that's correct.
And is there any discussion about forgiving interest on this?
Madam Chair, we have authority to not charge interest, but typically the only times that we do waive interest charges are when the taxpayer actually did not have use of the money. An example would be if they owed the state taxes and they accidentally sent the check to the IRS and the IRS cashed the check. Well, the taxpayer didn't have use of the money, neither did the state, but in that instance we would not charge interest.
Madam Chair, what is the interest rate?
Madam Chair, Senator Morris, the interest rate right now is 5%. That can be adjusted once per year, but it's been 5% for, I believe, the last 2 years. Typically, it's adjusted in January. It's based on the IRS interest rate.
That was a very reasonable rate.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So you've got your direction?
I think so.
All right. Great.
Thank you.
Anybody else want to testify on this? Mr. Douglas?
Good Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rob Douglas, representing the Oregon Society of Certified Public Accountants. We do endorse this piece of legislation, and we are pleased that the Department of Revenue does have the ability to waive both penalties and interest if circumstances warrant, and we are comfortable with that.
Okay, great. Thank you for putting that on the record. Any other questions or comments from the committee? Committee, I think we're ready to move this if you all are comfortable, because all of you have to be, otherwise we can't move it.
I'm good to go.
Okay, Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3454 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris has moved House Bill 3454 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. We will ask Senator Telfer to carry this bill. That's her penalty for
from
not being
CPA
here.
CPA to another.
Yes. Okay. Committee, that concludes our business for the day. Paul, we're not posted yet for Monday, but we're planning on meeting at 9 a.m. on Monday. I believe that's of Christ. Would you like to testify on that matter, Dr. Warner?
Madam Chair, we're planning on the Joint Tax Committee meeting Monday morning at 9, and then having the Senate Committee meet at 1.
Oh,
so
correct.
You have several items of business, and I'm thinking that, well, I won't say, but either one or two more meetings. But that,
yeah.
But you have business for Monday at 1.
That's correct. And thank you for correcting my session-addled brain that it's actually the Joint Committee that meets at 9, but that's also relevant since we're all on it.
Yeah.
Two meetings. Joint Committee at 9, which has not been posted yet, and our regular committee at 1. So with that notification, we are adjourned. We are adjourned. Notification, we